Good Sunday evening, everyone. It's Brad Hughes with special guest Aaron Beatley in the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up Space tonight, streaming exclusively in the Teach Better private Facebook group. It is Easter Sunday, 2024. Happy Easter if you're celebrating, and glad you're taking a few moments with me and Aaron to talk shop, to get you ready for your important week in education, to share some great ideas, to get motivated and inspired for the week ahead. As well as our Sunday Spark story tonight, bringing you a little bit of human interest and a little bit of, animal interest story tonight. That we're going to get to know Aaron Beatley soon. And right after this break, we'll be back. Thanks for joining us tonight at the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up here in the Teach Better private Facebook group. Hey everyone, welcome into the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up, streaming exclusively in the Teach Better private Facebook group. My name is Brad Hughes. I'm a school leader in Ontario, Canada. I'm also a member of the Teach Better team, and I'm excited to join tonight Aaron Beatley. Aaron, good evening and welcome. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, good evening. Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Aaron, I'm honored to have you on the show tonight, and happy Easter to Brian. Welcome in, Brian. Thanks for joining us. And if you are joining us live tonight, be sure to let us know who you are and where you are. Drop us a line in the comments. Say hello and good evening to Aaron. And make sure you hit us up with your questions and comments, whatever is coming up to mind for you. Aaron, here in Southern Ontario, we've had a very spring-like weather, a nice spring weekend to celebrate the Easter weekend. As well, it is Ramadan. Happy Ramadan. Ramadan Mubarak to those that are celebrating. And Aaron, let me know where in the world you are and what's up with Aaron and the Beatley family.
I am in, well, thank you for that. I'm in Georgetown, Kentucky, which is just north of Lexington. The weather's been kind of nice here. We're supposed to get some storms, I guess, this week, which is not uncommon. It might get snow next week. I don't know. But yeah, I'm in Lexington, Kentucky, celebrating a little bit of Easter today with two of our girls. We're a blended family. So we have four girls, two 18-year-olds and two 16-year-olds. And so we had a good time today and looking forward to a great week. They're all on spring break this week, so they're really looking forward to this. But the spring break calendar never matches up with the university calendar, so we work this week.
It's true. And like my part of the world here, Aaron, the calendar often never matches up with the weather you'd expect, whether it's sunshine one day and snow flurries the next. What makes Lexington such a cool place to live and work?
You know, it's a great place. I've been here 20 years. It's a great place to have a family. It's relatively quiet. There's lots of horses and things that the girls talk about it all the time that we just take for granted. We drive by these beautiful horse farms every day. And you know, I said, you know, some people live by mountains and they drive by them every day and don't think anything about it. But it's a quiet, great schools, great university, great place to work and raise kids. And it's close to everything, but not very close to anything, frankly. It's about 9 or 10 hours to the beach. But I'm originally from Dayton, Ohio, so it's relatively close. My wife's from Missouri, so it's relatively close to family. So we enjoy that part of it as well.
Aaron, as spring break is coming up for you and family, will the kids in your family be staying close to home? Do you and family have spring break plans coming up? What's going on for you?
Well, we have two of our girls are in Florida with their dad. Two of the girls are here right now, and they are heading to Texas to see family with their mom at the end of the week. So we won't have anyone here for, I guess, 5 days, but it all gets confusing. But we can't go anywhere because we have our classes, so we're not going anywhere. They are going, which is great. I'm so happy they get to go experience other things. One of my oldest daughter's a senior, so she went on a cruise with her mom for her senior trip. And so that they are getting out and about as they head into their teen years and enjoying life during spring break and getting to experience spring break, which is not something we've got to do because we're always working in the university.
You know, Aaron, on my Facebook and Instagram feeds, I frequently see families shouting out and celebrating lots of different milestones having to do with their child's senior year. Can you tell me a little bit about your senior and a little bit about what your family might be doing to celebrate and honor this this terrific occasion?
Well, we have two seniors, so that's even better. We call them step twins. They're a month apart. So my wife has an 18-year-old and I have an 18-year-old. It's been a little odd. I don't know if you've experienced this, but their senior years, they don't go to school very much. They have online classes and they're taking classes at universities, and it's kind of that it's not really anticlimactic. Like my oldest is going to have her associate's degree before she graduates from high school.
Wow.
So it's just a different dynamic of, you know, this building up and building up and building up. And then it's just not as much of a buildup in the, you know, it used to be this because it was a momentous occasion you were heading on. And now it's just next year is going to be kind of like this year, except for there'll be in a different location. So, but we are having the traditional parties and those types of things, and they're getting pictures taken. And they don't have class rings. They don't do class keys. I think they went and had their senior pictures taken, like for the school and those types of things. So there's some of that tradition left.
You know, I'd love to know more about what lights you up and more about your role in education. Can you talk with me about your role as an educator and as a contributor to lots of different educational communities?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I'm a professor at the University of Kentucky where I train teachers. But the big piece of that training teachers means you get to work with teachers as well. And at least in my perspective, I think it's really important that professors stay in touch with schools and get out. I was just out last Wednesday and Friday. I haven't been out this semester yet to get my lunch eaten by a bunch of kindergartners because I don't remember to pace my instruction and things like that. But I do enjoy that piece of it. One of the things I missed when I first started my doctorate was actually getting out and teaching students and teaching kids, like real kids. And so I enjoy that piece of it. And I make sure I get to do that because it's just not the same when you don't get that energy from students. And so that's a big piece of what I do. I also write books and write articles and do workshops, things like that. But it's the foundation of what I do is preparing teachers and re-energizing and keeping as young as I can. My hair is going away and it's turning colors. And my daughters now, they're getting old enough. They're like, gosh, I can't imagine having you as a professor. I'm like, yeah, some people are lucky and some people aren't. So, that's kind of the foundation of what I do is train teachers. I love working with teachers. I think teachers are the fabric of our society. Everything goes through us as educators. And I think that's exciting and something I try and convey to our students to have that energy and understand, A, the importance of what you do, and B, the joy of what you do.
Incredible. And one thing I often reflect on, Aaron, is how the kids that we serve are maybe changed by interactions with the adults in their lives, but just as importantly, how the adults and kids' lives are changed by their interactions with children and young people. I wonder what your aspiring teachers, what your pre-service teachers are telling you when they come back to the classroom, maybe after some pre-service learning or maybe some time in the classroom, about how they're changing and what they're learning from the kids that they're serving.
Absolutely. They think it because they go out early on in their career when they're a student and they see master teachers. We place them with really good teachers. And they see it happen and they're like, you can do that. And then the reality, you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, like, you know, Mike Tyson said. So they get out and start teaching. They're like, wow, you know, understanding the energy that kids have, you know, we always talk about providing energy in secondary and containing energy in elementaries, but just that energy that comes from, because most of them, frankly, when they go out to schools, our students, they're not used to being up at 8 a.m. It's just a new concept for them. And I tell them, you don't have to have any energy when you get to an 8-year-old and they'll bring you some energy when you're or 6-year-olds or whatever they're teaching. And they come back and like, yeah, they're energetic and they love life. And it's kind of, you know, you think about when you're 18 and you've just graduated and you're dragging through university and all of a sudden you've got these kindergartners that look at you like, provide me some information here, teach me. Do something, entertain me, whatever it is. And I think the younger teachers start to really see that and see the importance of what they do. And they always, when they leave at the end of student teaching, they're always shocked that kids are upset when they leave. And I'm like, you're impacting kids. And I hope I encourage them to never lose sight of that you are impacting the lives of these kids. And you might not ever hear it, but you are impacting their lives.
Aaron, I wonder what kind of conversations come up among you and your faculty members, not only about preparing our young people for life in education, but helping them to prepare for the ups and downs, the inevitable setbacks and frustrations, but also preparing them to, I guess, have a stance of openness to learning that is hopefully going to help them help us retain these young people in the profession at a time when teachers are maybe leaving the profession in record numbers across the U.S. and Canada. What are your faculty members talking about in terms of not only preparing young people for teaching, but helping them to stay in the profession long term?
Yeah, that's the key. I mean, we talk to them about and try to inspire them and talk to them about the importance of what they do. We have current student teachers come talk to new student teachers and those type or coming in student teachers. One of the things we do early on, it's one of the first things I do in a class I have with students, is I challenge them to think of a teacher that they loved and why they love them. And we talk about it and they talk about the teacher, and then the assignment, or not really an assignment, but the challenge at the end of that class. And anybody listening, I challenge you to do this as well, is they have to email that teacher and let them know. And I tell them that because that's a feeling that you don't get very often as a teacher, that, wow, I've impacted. I said, just tell them, I'm in a class, I'm going to be a teacher, and I just want to tell you that you are a great teacher. And that little thing that we can do to help inspire them. We also, the last thing we have them do as an assignment is a Dear Older Me assignment, where they write a letter to themselves about why they want to be a teacher. And I encourage them. I've had students email me back and say, I read that during a tough time of teaching and it really helped, because their passion for teaching is tremendous as a new teacher. And I want them to capture that, and I want them to be able to remember that. Now, that's the capstone of the program. In the middle is the idea of giving them the competence. Accreditation has its ups and downs. It's got its pluses and minuses. But one of the things that's come out of accreditation we did probably 8 years ago was our students have to be in schools 200 hours before they student teach. And that has helped tremendously to build them and give them the competence that they, when they go out and student teach, wow, I can do this. And it helped. I mean, it's been night and day what students can do and how comfortable they feel once they've done that. And I think that's a huge piece of it. I think you have to believe that what you do matters, that being a teacher matters. And then you have to have some competence, and you have those two. If you think it matters and you can teach, that helps to stay in the field. And, you know, there's all kind of, and I tell them, everybody thinks they know how to teach. And I tell them, don't even get into the debate. I don't argue. Say, you might be right. You know what I encourage you to do? I encourage you to go spend about 2 or 3 days in a school and then come back and we can talk. I'm the older I get, a little bit more blunt about it, but most people don't really understand all the things that schools do. And we talk to students about this, how it's unbelievable that, think about what a major school district does. They get kids to school. They feed them at least one or two meals. They get them home safely. And oh, by the way, they teach them as well. That's unbelievable that a system does that. And so I think those are important concepts to get across to students, that know you're impacting, take deep breaths. I do talk a little bit about some of the things with like handling their emails and those types of things as well. But I think there's an important piece of being competent and having a passion for what you do.
You know, it sounds a lot like the Teach Better mentality. You know, Aaron, it's making life a little bit better each and every day for ourselves and for the people that we serve and that we work with. Right after this break, we're going to dive into some strategies. And Aaron, I know that you're passionate not only about preparing educators to be their best, but also to helping educators to feel and maintain themselves at their best. We're going to get into that right after this break. Stay tuned. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up, streaming exclusively in the Teach Better private Facebook group. It's Brad Hughes here with Dr. Aaron Beatley in the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up space. And Aaron is a faculty member in Kentucky. He is a professor, faculty of education. And before the break, we were talking about how things continue to change as we prepare our young people to be educators and to make differences in the lives of kids. And we're talking about mentor teachers and talking about student teachers with one of our viewers tonight. Hannah says that having a student teacher was one of the best experiences that she's had, reminding her to slow down, truly take in those little moments. And Aaron, as a school principal myself, I think one of the most incredible and transformative ways that educators can continue their growth is to host a student teacher. Often in our classrooms, we may feel or actually be kind of toiling in isolation with our door closed or maybe not really well connected to what's going on in the school life around us. And having a pre-service teacher with you gives you that opportunity to really dive into why you do what you do with a willing and an eager listener and learner, but also much for the seasoned educator to learn. Has that been your experience too, Aaron, in terms of what you're hearing from your host teachers, from your associate teachers?
No doubt about it. They get better, I think. I mean, some could disagree with me, and I don't, the literature's out there a little bit, but I think student teaching is the most important piece. And it does, as a teacher, all the cooperating teachers we work with, they're like, it just requires me to, as Hannah said, to rethink and to say, oh, all the things I take for granted that I do, you know, it's like when I go out and teach kindergarten, you know, I remember, man, you have to be so explicit with kindergartners. And over there's a lot of over there's in the world. And, you know, those types of things. And the same thing with a cooperating teacher, that they get so much value that they have to push things back. We come out as supervisors, they get to talk, they have someone there, especially in the physical education world where they're often the only physical educator in a building. So they have someone else to talk to about ideas. And then when we come out, but we've been blessed with phenomenal cooperating teachers, and they always say they get better, and they because they're forced to think about these things and be more explicit about what they're teaching.
Aaron, I just love how you refer to the host teacher or associate teacher as a cooperating teacher. You know, cooperate to work together to get better together. I just love that, and would love to take that back to my school. Right now, in our school, we are hosting three pre-service teachers with their cooperating teachers. And not only are these young people, these educators, learning so much from their hosts or cooperating teachers, but they're also very active in the life of the school. I've got pre-service teachers who are hosting intramural athletics, music, as well as just being available to the whole faculty and the whole school, just making a positive difference. How do you help your pre-service teachers, your education students, stay connected not only to the life of the classroom, but make contributions to the life of the school in general?
This is, again, I don't take credit for it. It's our cooperating teachers that do it all. They, we've worked, and it's taken a long time, but they get them involved in faculty. I mean, it's faculty meetings. Anytime they go, anytime, wherever they go in the school, they introduce them. We tell our student teachers, you're interviewing. This is a big district, but everybody knows everybody. And so when you're talking to people, when you go to sporting events, when you go to faculty meeting, music events, they just had a play at one of the schools where our student teachers were at. So they were there during that. They got to see that whole process. It's essential. And it's, you know, your lessons are great. But the impact you're going to have on the students is going to be outside your lessons, probably, or something beyond the content of your lessons. And we just, that's a solid foundation of what we build on from the first time we ever see students in our program, is to get to know their students, get out into the school, engage with them, those types of things. And again, it's just the foundation, and it's the rock that you build everything else on.
You know, starting the profession and then staying in the profession really isn't something that really any faculty of education or any cooperating teacher can actually instruct. It really comes down to a commitment on the behalf of, you know, educators as individuals, but also schools and districts and even states and provinces to really prioritize teacher well-being as a prerequisite to student well-being. And I'd love to dig in with you about your take, both as a physical educator, but also as a faculty of education member. What kind, maybe the systems or the approaches that educators could take, even beginning this week, to really prioritize their well-being, staying efficient and staying positive. What do you think?
Yeah, this is something I'll try not to nerd out too much on. Gotten into this a little bit before COVID, but then really during COVID, and I've been this way all my life, but I'm really, when I first started teaching, my mind goes a lot. And so I'm teaching and I find out if I try and remember things, it doesn't work. So I'm very distracted. So one of the things I try and do is be very efficient with my time, even still to this day. So I've developed it by stealing from a bunch of other people. There's a book called Getting Things Done by David Allen. There's a book, Tiago Forte, F-O-R-T-E, has a book, it's the Second Brain. Ali Abdaal has a book that's called Feel Good Productivity. Lots of resources out there. There's a ton. But the idea is to have some system so you can remember stuff. And when I was teaching, I had a recorder, a voice recorder. That is just, that's all we had then. PDAs weren't out. It was just, it was not, that's all we had.
Yeah.
But now I really encourage teachers that when you have anything that crosses your mind, get it out of your mind. David Allen, one of the productivity gurus, says your mind is a great place for ideas, but it's a terrible place to store anything. And it's not very, so get it out of your mind. If you're thinking, I need to talk to Sally's mom, write it down, voice record something, because if you keep going, I need to talk to Sally's mom, then I got to say this, then I'll say this, you're not present in front of your students. So having some kind of system to help you get things out of your mind. And then once you get them out of your mind, some call that capturing ideas, but, and then organizing them. And so if I have a notepad and I have a voice recorder. So any app you can use, a voice recorder, there's one called Brain Toss. I don't know if you're familiar with Brain Toss.
Not yet.
You leave a recording and it sends an email that's a text to you. So if you have if I'm writing a paper and I have an idea for a way to introduce the paper or a vignette to start the paper, if I leave that on Brain Toss, it automatically goes to my email and it's in text and I just highlight it and put it in somewhere wherever I want to organize it. So that's what I use a lot is Brain Toss. I use it when I'm listening to podcasts. I use it when I'm listening to you guys all the time, that I have my phone set up. So Brain Toss and Apple and the app comes up for my podcast. And anytime I want to leave a recording, I just hit the recording, talk into it, and it sends an email and I don't have to remember anything. So especially while I'm driving, it's a nice feature to have. So that's the first piece of it, is to kind of capture those ideas. And then organizing, that's the biggie for me. And so everything, usually most things will go into one of these four categories. So I'm teaching and you know, you're walking around, you've got these 30 little bodies and they're all engaged and in activity, and you think of something, either go write it down or record it. Then after class or some other point, then you can organize it. And then it goes into either it's a calendar, it's a meeting I need to have. So it goes into my calendar. It can go into my Dropbox if it's like an idea for an article. It can go into, what else do I use? Dropbox. Oh, AnyDo if it's something on my to-do list.
Yep.
And what's the last thing I do? I'm drawing a blank. Calendar, to-do list. Oh, and OneNote. If it's a note related to, you know, if it's somebody on here is talking about some kind of teaching style and I want to go put that note in that teaching style, then it goes into there. So it's grabbing those ideas. I mean, you know, how many of you are driving to work or on a bus to work and you think, I need bananas. And then you get home, you're like, I didn't get bananas. And it's just simple things like that that free you up as a person to not only be present with your students, be present with your family, and also, long story, but this is kind of how I got into this. It frees up to be active and be more physically active. So that's just kind of the gist of the idea. There's so much more about it. But I think as teachers, it helps tremendously to try and make our lives more efficient so we can, again, so we can be present, but also take care of ourselves.
There's big plates that educators have and they're full. It seems that the plates keep getting bigger. And the plates keep getting fuller and fuller. And it sounds like your key to that headspace that everybody needs to, I guess, feel at their best or approach their best is through that efficiency, getting things out of your head, getting it into some kind of a recording system, some kind of a schedule. And do you find that that feeds some reflective work as well? When we talk about young people learning to teach, the concept of being a reflective practitioner, not just doing, but thinking about what you've done, what you might do differently. What's the role of reflection for you, Aaron?
Yeah, it's actually, I'll do it tonight after I'm done with this. It's the preview every week. I look forward to make sure nothing surprises me and shows up and like, oh, I got a doctoral defense and I didn't read the dissertation, you know, one of those things. Or I'm observing a student teacher and I didn't get his lesson plan, those types of things that, so I review and at the end of every week and then I preview as well. And that piece of it, helps tremendously to stay in. No surprises on, you know, and to stress me out. And you know, there's some research on this somewhere. I know I've heard people talk about it, that like if you get stressed at like 11 o'clock, that impacts you for like 8 hours and it distracts you. So you eliminate that as much as you can. This isn't foolproof. I'm as much of a mess as everybody else, but it does help with that. And it's not much different. You know, when I was in grad school, when I was teaching as well, we called it the good teaching process. I don't know if that's the term that everybody uses, but where you understand your audience, then you create your objectives or your outcomes, then you teach your audience, and then you evaluate. This is the same process. And then you evaluate and make changes. And I'm changing my system all the time. I used to use a tiny little notepads, and that was dumb. Didn't work for me. So now I have this big old notepad. And so if I have a handwritten note, I used to use a voice recorder that made me go back and listen to it. So now I use BrainToss because it types it up. So it's a constant process. And we talk to our students about this, that long story, but I think the most important part of our lesson plan format is the reflection piece. And the most important part to me when I go out and watch a student teacher is like, how do you think it went? And get them to dig into it went good. But no, we need to talk more about this and get them to dig into that. And that reflection piece, it's an important part of teaching, important part of life. I mean, to preview and review and be constantly. Otherwise, you know, the old adage, you're going to teach 1 year 20 times as opposed to 20 years. So it's that kind of thing. Otherwise, you get stuck and you're complacent and don't haven't changed much over the last 20 years.
Another way we can get stuck as educators is insisting on perfection. And I can remember as a student teacher wanting to craft sort of the perfect lesson plan. And I knew that my cooperating teacher would be watching and observing and evaluating. And it would just be a big emotional jam up when actually what we want to get to is, as you said at the outset of our conversation, that sense of capacity, that sense of curiosity, and that sense of creativity, constantly reinventing what we do, whether it's shifting from a post-it note to a voice note or shifting through what we're learning and what we're teaching. Just, you know, teaching can be a creative act if we give ourselves the permission to do it. How do young teachers, how do educators in general face that tension between needing or wanting to get it right and giving ourselves permission to create as we go?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Students, even in we have a class this semester that students that are going out and they've taught before, but no, not with someone watching them teach. Other than the site that where they are. And one of the things we find is they're very robotic. Like when I say go, I want you and not really feeling it. And so one of the things I have a pretty good student teacher right now that, but one of the things I challenged him with is just one time while I'm here, I want you to start a battle of instruction with, I wonder what. And just to get them that it's okay to let the kids explore a little bit. I wonder what would be the best way to take this ball and move it to this bucket. What would be the best way? And let's explore that. Something like that to get them to understand. And I probably need to start it early on. I mean, we emphasize the importance of connecting and relationships from the first time I ever meet students. That's the first thing they have to do when they go out and observe anything in our program is they have to meet three students and know three things about them. And we probably need to go a little bit more on it. It's not as much about the lesson plan. Lesson plans, there's a lot of them. It's great. Not that lesson plans aren't important, but there's a piece of mechanics of teaching that is this connecting with students and teaching with wonder. Somebody said it better than I did, but that the whole idea of I wonder, because you don't have the answers. I mean, you know, we have to get over that as teachers.
Aaron, as we wrap up this part of our conversation, I'm wondering if you can channel your faculty of education role or your passion as a physical educator or as someone who just cares about the best for educators, and maybe put out a challenge to those watching and listening with us live tonight, or maybe listening to us on Teach Better Talk podcast. What kind of challenge might you put out there when it comes to educators looking ahead to their week, whether it's around efficiency, well-being, or maybe cultivating relationships that are going to be important to them?
This comes out of the blue a little bit, but my challenge is going to be for all educators to get on your phone immediately, set an alarm for a time that you have every day. I don't care if it's 5 minutes or 20 minutes or 30 seconds, and just call that alarm, do something for me. Oh. And it's not selfish. It's not selfish in any way, shape, or form. Because as teachers, we are bucket fillers. But when you fill buckets, my grandpa Beatley said, you can't dip from an empty bucket. And when your bucket's empty, you're going to have a tough time. And that 5 minutes, again, I don't care if it's go out and look at the sun. I don't care if it's go outside and stand when it's cold. Whatever you want to do for you for those 5 minutes, find the time. Set an alarm. Don't. You have to set the alarm and do it every day. And that, again, I've done this with other groups as well. And I've got emails from teachers like, man, and that 5 minutes grew to 10 minutes and they figured out a different part of the day and those types of things. I think that's huge.
You know, Aaron, I'm going to put that challenge out to our school staff as we head into the week. I'm also going to put that challenge out as a message, a part of our recap of our Sunday weekly warm-up. And I would love to hear and learn what our Teach Better community is setting their alarms to do something just for you. And I would love for you to have that feedback reach you as what a difference making challenge you just come up with there. And that's wonderful. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We're going to be right back after a quick break for the Sunday Spark here in the Teach Better Sunday Weekly Warm-Up. Stay with us. Welcome back, everybody. You're with Brad Hughes and Dr. Aaron Beatley here. It's the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up, streaming exclusively in the Teach Better private Facebook group. And it's going to be rebroadcast Monday at 8 Eastern to our Teach Better Talk podcast, as well as all of our socials, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, LinkedIn. Be sure that you like and subscribe wherever this reaches you. And be sure to visit all of our recaps of all of our live and recorded shows over at the Teach Better YouTube channel. Aaron, this is a special time of the week where we have a story that is designed to lighten and brighten and maybe spark some conversation in the staff room or in your classroom or maybe in your university classroom with your pre-service teachers. And we were talking earlier about some Easter celebrations. And Aaron, I'm going to add to our stage this picture here of the Easter Bunny, or it's actually the Easter raccoon, Aaron, if you can believe that. Cadbury's chocolate is big this time of year. And this, believe it or not, is the Cadbury Easter bunny for 2024. Now, it might not look like a bunny. Kind of looks like a raccoon to me. But Louie the raccoon took home the 2024 title by winning the most online votes in the Cadbury brand's sixth annual competition this March. Now, Louis gets a cash prize of $7,000. He's going to be in a Cadbury commercial, and he's already got quite the following on social media. In fact, he's got an artwork account. So I don't know. I'm going to check out Louis. Louis is a multi-talented raccoon, much more than just a masked bandit here. He's a Cadbury spokes bunny. He was orphaned in 2021, Aaron. He was rescued by a former veterinary technician. And since he couldn't survive on his own, she decided that she would take in this Miami raccoon and even named him after her late father. So a very strong, very personal connection to Louie the raccoon, who is now Cadbury's spokes bunny for 2024. I'm not sure if you have pets or if the Easter Bunny visited the Beatley household, but wanted to get your thoughts on Louie the raccoon.
I didn't know raccoons could be domesticated. That's awesome. We have a cat, and I say that, and you can see the look on my face. But I'm not a cat. I mean, he's fine. He's a pretty clean, quiet cat. The only problem is I'm the only one in the house that didn't want the cat, and the cat wakes me up at 5:15 every morning to be fed. So with a headbutt, I mean, that's how I get woken up. It's great. But back to the raccoon, that's just crazy. A raccoon that's like tame and trained. That's impressive. And obviously there's money in it.
Very lucrative to be the Cadbury Easter Bunny. Yeah. I think, Aaron, you and I might want to collaborate just kind of put on some bunny ears. Maybe you and I could try out for the Cadbury Bunny 2025. I think $7,000 cash prize would be pretty sweet and not a bad way to celebrate this.
We did a commercial?
I think so. And I'll be making sure to post this story in our Facebook group, as well as in our Teach Better Ambassador and our Teach Better Mastermind group. And I'm really intrigued about Louie's artwork. I wonder if the artwork is like little raccoon paws. I'm really curious to see what Louie's been up to at the canvas.
Probably going to be much better than we think.
Aaron, you've been somebody special to interview tonight for our Easter episode. And I'd love it if you just take a second to let people know the best way to reach you and to stay in touch with you, whether it's email or socials. How can people stay in touch with you?
Yeah, the best way probably is my email, which is my last name, which is beighle@uky.edu. That's University of Kentucky. If you Google me, I think I'm the only one on the planet, Aaron Beatley. And it's my name as well on X is Aaron Beatley, and Instagram, I think, is the same thing. But email's best.
Really glad to welcome you into the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up Space tonight. Dr. Aaron Beatley, thanks so much for sharing your passion for not only education, but educating the educators, preparing them to make differences in the lives of kids. That's what we're all about here in the Teach Better community, is a little bit better each day to make lives a little bit better and better. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Aaron.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was an honor to be here.
Wishing you all the best at the U of Kentucky, and wishing everyone watching a very happy Easter and a very successful and happy week ahead, whatever your important role is in education. Don't forget to tune in to Teach Better Today, our morning show. That's daily, 7 a.m. Eastern, for up-to-date education news and chat. A little bit of shenanigans come up from time to time too, Aaron. So we hope that you'll join us wherever we are, live here in the Teach Better space. Have a wonderful week.